Prime Minister Jennifer Westacott from KPMG. A question on energy. You recently made a point when you were addressing the Canadian Parliament that Australia and Canada have a lot of shared interest in uranium. Can you say something more about that comment and what you think that shared interest is?
Well, I think... I'll speak more quietly. I think that the similarities are fairly obvious. We both have large reserves of uranium. We have roughly equivalent sized economies. Canada's is larger than ours, but not all that much larger. Each of us are developed countries, and each of us has therefore a very direct influence in the nuclear fuel cycle. And there's a body still fairly embryonic in its form being put together largely at the instance of the United States and the other nuclear powers, which we will have to watch very carefully to see that it doesn't in any way impact negatively on countries like Australia and Canada. I mean, we have large reserves of uranium, and therefore we're very much part of the future scene. But under the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, to which both of us adhere, we're naturally not nuclear powers, and we have no aspiration, let me say, to become nuclear powers. But we have a very big interest in any arrangements that might have the consequence of shutting Australia out. And it was in that kind of context that I mentioned that issue when I spoke to the Canadian Parliament. I'm not suggesting that there is any malevolence on the part of other countries, but to use that wonderful expression, we want to avoid any unintended consequences of other arrangements, and we have an interest because of our similarities in doing so.
Thank you.
Thank you. I think we have a question right ahead.
Mr. Prime Minister, Steve Kavanagh from GHD. GHD has something like 450 engineers and scientists that work in the environmental field, numerous others in water and energy, and it's a very creative environment. Unfortunately, the difficulty we have, and this is my job, is how to get that creativity into the marketplace. Just a very quickly, an example recently, we responded to a tender, a water tender in this state, and we came up with an innovative solution. It saved 43 gigalitres of water a year, and it cost less than a quarter of the successful tender, but it wasn't compliant with the tender, although it achieved all its objectives. When we asked why, when you save so much water and save so much money, they said, well, the feds are paying for it all anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Who's paying for it all?
The feds.
The feds?
You, sir.
Me? Give me the name of the agency, please.
The point is that they had a view of how things should be done.
Yeah.
We came up with an innovative and creative solution that actually saw water being piped to one of our largest inland cities as well, plus a whole lot of other creative ideas and saving water and money, but it was not accepted. And I find there's lots of issues like this with three tiers of government, supposed probity
Stephen,
ideas.
Stephen, if we can get to the question, probably that'll be
helpful. Yeah, the question is, Mr. Prime Minister, you talked about innovation. I think innovation and creativity is the way we're going to get forward in these. What environmental issues, what will you do with our institutions? What incentives can the federal government provide?
Well, it takes a while to answer that. I would be very interested in, seriously, and I do mean it seriously, if you would like to provide me with some of those, you know, I'm interested in all of these field experiences that people have.
And we have, we have a number of them like that.
look, the most valuable incentive we can provide in both the energy and water markets is to introduce the discipline of the market. The best thing that we've done in relation to water is to start treating it as a scarce and tradable commodity. And John Anderson, when he was Deputy Prime Minister and in charge of these matters, did a terrific job in getting the National Water Initiative together. And it was really built around the idea that entitlement for water should become a tradable thing, you should have a title to water, and you should not lose that without proper compensation, and you should be able to trade it. And just as the river systems of Australia flow across state borders, and the Great Artesian Basin has no regard for state boundaries, so we need to have a national system. So, I mean, that's the greatest incentive of all. And if we can get the disciplines of the market into many of these areas, that will make an enormous difference.
Do we have a question there?
Good afternoon, Prime Minister. John Clark from ANZ Infrastructure Services. Around 2 years ago, your government provided a capital grants and production credits to assist in the development of the biodiesel industry. It was therefore very disappointing that after a number of industry participants invested over $100 million worth of biodiesel production plants, many located in regional Australia, that the recent fuel tax ice reform have effectively clawed these production subsidies back. There was a common agreement in industry participants these changes are materially adverse to the fledgling biodiesel industry and a U-turn to previous government commitments. Given the increasing concerns on environmental sustainability, energy pricing and energy security of supply, why was this recent legislation drafted and passed in this way?
Well, I don't entirely accept your depiction of what happened. Biodiesel will always be, in terms of excise treatment, will always be preferred and favoured over petroleum. Because even by 2015, when you have fully phased in the taxation of commodities such as ethanol, it will still only be half the excise on petroleum. I think what you're talking about is that when we introduced under the Energy White Paper the excise-free status of off-road use of fuel, the natural advantage, because the excise on biodiesel was half the excise on fuel, the natural advantage that biodiesel enjoyed disappeared. Now, I think it's a bit rich to ask us to reinstate something that removed an advantage because the thing against which it was competing has become excise-free. And I just don't accept... I'm sorry, I don't see what we did recently. I mean, what we did recently was not to alter the revenue status of biodiesel and petroleum. What we did recently involved a number of things. It involved the methodology by which you could claim back diesel fuel credits. Previously, you did it by a grant system, and we enable people to do it under their business activity statement. But what you're referring to, the disadvantage of biodiesel, is brought about by the fact that because certain usages off-road of fuel no longer attract excise at 38 cents a litre, and biodiesel was being taxed at a much lower rate than that, therefore the advantage biodiesel enjoyed disappeared. And I don't think there's much we can do about that.
No, Prime Minister, it actually affects on-road trucks by over 4.5 tonnes.
Mm. Yeah, well, but there's also the impact of it off-road as well, and I think that is the point that people have complained to me about. But whatever vehicle you're talking about, you would agree with me, wouldn't you, that if something is given a preferential excise treatment compared with another fuel, and certain usages of that other fuel are made excise-free, of course the preference disappears.